greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on advertising when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? It's pretty obvious today that something is wrong and terribly wrong with the Ten Commandments because they have been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and they've been banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we now see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they teach these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. We practice them in our everyday way of life. We've made them a part of our national consciousness. And this is a very radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. For instance, are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent? But your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments. Let's go back to the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties, and the 33 benefits that you receive for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effect. So whether you call this Mosaic Law the Law of God, the Law of Moses, or the Common Law, or Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happened to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. That's an easy one. The click on the website onto the email is just a push of the button. And then you can send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about advertising, and there are certain things about advertising that you're not supposed to know. There are things in business that lay people are not supposed to know. And I come on the air and I say, well, listen, let me tell you some of these things that you're not supposed to know. Because if you knew these little trade secrets, from the used car dealer to the insurance agent to the doctors and the dentists and the professionals, it would empower you to do business with a sense of power and opportunity that has been denied you. And that's because if you knew that the druggist, when he's selling you these drugs, has a profit margin that ranges from 1 to 200 to 300 keystones. And did you hear that? Listen, when you buy a gallon of gasoline and the markup is 12 cents, you know, you're paying $2 for a gallon of gas and the markup is 6 cents, you're paying 12 cents to the guy that's dispensing this gasoline, you know, the 7-Eleven store, the Circle K store. He's got about a 6% markup in that gasoline. That's because it's what we call a fair trade item in the trade. It's a fair trade item. And if you're driving down the street and looking at gasoline prices, they're all the same. They're all within a nickel. All the gas prices are a penny or 2 pennies or 3 pennies or a nickel. And that's because you have price fixing. Come on, kids, let's wake up. All gasoline prices are rigged. That's why they're all fair trade item. Milk in any store in town, it all prices the same. There isn't a nickel's worth of price difference in a gallon of milk from one store to the next. Fair trade item. Now, the grocery store has to carry the milk. It's expected in a grocery store. If the supermarket had their druthers, they wouldn't handle milk at all. No milk, zero. If a 7-Eleven store had their druthers, there wouldn't be any creamed corn or asparagus in the store. All they would have is beer, wine, soda pops, cigarettes, and that's it. That's it. Oh, maybe some items like jerky or something like that. Something with high markup and high turnover. They wouldn't have any gasoline. So the store has what it has because it's scientifically designed to attract you to that store. The convenience store, that is the Jiffy or the 7-Eleven Circle K, he has gasoline not because there's any money in the gasoline, but because you have to have gasoline and you're going to stop here to buy gasoline and come into the store to pay for it. Then when you come into the store, you're going to buy the high profit items. This is where they make their markup. It's in beer, wine, cigarettes, and some fast items, you know, like chewing gum, chocolate bars, and beef jerky. Now, that's where the money's at. And all the rest of this stuff in the store is there for glitz. Well, listen, all businesses have that. All businesses. The furniture store. He's got his bread and butter items that he makes his money on, and then he's got all the rest of the stuff in the store, which is the glitz. It's the stuff that you expect to find in a furniture store to give you this wide selection. And there's a markup in that. There's a profit margin. So in these fair trade items, there's nothing in it. And the only reason they're there is because they're things that you buy every day, like bread, milk, gasoline. Those are things you buy every day. Now, here's the things that are high markup. In the pharmaceutical industry, it costs $1,200 a ton to buy the raw ingredients to make Sudafed. Sudafed is the ingredients that we need for ecstasy and for there's another drug here that they use, the illegal drug on the market. I'll think of the name here in a minute. And it's $1,200 a ton, and there's three companies in the world that make it, and all three of them are over in India. And they make it so cheap in India that Pfizer and Merck and the big pharmaceuticals don't even try to make it here in the United States because, you know, they got to pay $10 or $20 an hour, you know, to chemists and so on to make it. So they make it over in India. Now get this, this product, at $1,200 a ton, when you divide it out into the pills that you buy over the counter down at the drugstore in a product called Sudafed, which is the ingredient that they use, and they go buy all this up and they make this, I forget the name of this crap now, but there's a drug, you know, pretty popular, you know. They call it the speed uppers, you know, something on that order. And so it's $1,200 a ton when you import it into the country. You turn it into the Sudafed, and it is so cheap that three pills that you're paying $1 a pill or 50 cents a pill or $2 a pill for, every pill that they turn out, it's three pills for a penny. That's what it costs them. That's how cheap this stuff is. The active ingredients in these drugs are so cheap you can't even measure the stuff. I mean, that's how cheap it is. Now, they sell this stuff. Let's just take a pill that costs a penny to make, and they sell it for $1. That has 100 keystones in it. The gasoline has about 6%, and this pill has 100 times. You know, when you mark it up, you buy it for $1, you sell it for $2, that's one keystone. You buy it for $1, you sell it for $2, that's two marks. You buy it for $1, you sell it for $3, like jewelry, and it's got three marks in it. My God, we say the jewelry business is a wonderful business. Why, things are marked up 300%, three marks in it. Well, the drug industry, it costs them a penny, and they charge you $1. That's got 100 marks in it. I tell you, boys and girls, drugs are a hell of a lot better, you know, at making money and profit than is banking or insurance. And you thought the bankers had it, you know. Well, they do. It costs them 3 cents to turn out one of those paper bills, you know. Whether it's a dollar bill, a $5 bill, a $10, $20, $50, or $100 bill, costs 3 cents to print one of those. And then when they go out and spend it, they get 100 cents on the dollar. Now, that's pretty good, you know. So on a dollar bill, they have three, divide three into 100. How many marks have you got in a dollar bill? The Federal Reserve makes good money. Not quite as good as Merck and Pfizer, but you know. You take 100 and divide that by 3 and you get 33. And so it's got 33 marks in it. So the manufacturer of paper currency has 33 marks. But when you're turning out Sudafed, you know you're making 100 marks. Actually, Sudafed is 300 marks. That's how profitable it is. This is why the illegal drugs flow into the United States, and they sell for less than half what the same drugs sell for in the drugstore. So, you know, when you've got the cartels down in Colombia making cocaine and crack and heroin and marijuana and on and on it goes, you know. These illegal drugs that are being made and then shipped into the United States, smuggled into the United States, they have such a tremendous profit margin in them over the costs of manufacture that it makes it well worthwhile to take the risks to smuggle them in. And of course the big drug manufacturers, they don't want the competition. You know, boys and girls, just think about it for a minute. 82% of Americans take one prescription drug. If you take all the prescription drugs that are prescribed and sold in America, divide that by 300 million people, on average, the average American is taking one prescription drug. So, boys and girls, 82% of the people of America believe in drugs, and they participate in drugs, and they use drugs themselves. Now, if you're over 65 years old, 65 years or older, on average, that group of people are taking 6 prescription drugs. 6! On average. So just take a look at some guy that's 68 years old, and you can just watch him. The guy's a drug addict. He's on 6 prescription medications. Now, of course, he says, well, I've got to have that for my heart, and I got to have that for my diabetes, and I got to have this one over here for my gout, and so on. I'm not being critical of the guy taking the drugs. After all, that's what he wants to do. It's a choice that he makes. But America is a nation of drug-addicted people. We are a nation of drug addicts. And to say that we don't want these illegal drugs on the street is simply saying we want government-approved drugs. We're opposed to anybody using the free enterprise system and providing drugs at a lower cost in the marketplace. We want a monopoly in drugs. And these very same people complain about the drug companies and the high prices. So what's happened is Americans have been converted over from the free market, free enterprise, Ten Commandments system to communism, monopoly, and the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. So on the one hand, we all want to take drugs, and we all complain about the high cost of drugs. Excuse me. Excuse me. We're opposed to illegal drugs, but 82% of us are on drugs. And we're opposed to drugs? I mean, come on, kids. Let's grow up and get real. We're a nation of drug addicts and we're confused. We don't know what the hell we want. That's the bottom line. But one thing, we want cheap drugs, but we want cheap drugs from Rexall. Listen, that's like a virgin whore. You can't have a virgin and a whore. You can have one or the other. You can't have a monopoly in drugs and have cheap drugs. If you want cheap drugs, then you've got to have competition. That's the bottom line. So that's why the drug companies, they guard the profit margin with their lives. That's why I had this druggist, you know, he's a student here, and I said, my God, I didn't know some of these secrets here. Come on in here and let's get on the air. So a while back, I put on a little series of programs, I think two or three here with this druggist, and he kind of told us, well, this is the way the drug business works, and here's the way this game is being played. Now, there's another thing that we use here to, in our advertising, you know, to sell you things over here. It's called addiction. Coca-Cola, Mountain Dew, and Jolt are addictive. And they have caffeine. Caffeine is addictive. I don't know if you knew that or not, but it is. And it used to be in Coca-Cola, they had cocaine in it. They made them take the cocaine out, but, you know, they still have, I guess, a little bit in there. I don't know how much, but Coca-Cola, Mountain Dew, and they tell us that Mountain Dew is harder to get off of than heroin. So if you're addicted to Mountain Dew, and if you can get off of Mountain Dew, you will have done what most heroin addicts are unable to do. That's how addictive that is. And I had a guy working here one time, and he used to buy Mountain Dew in the 2-liter bottles by the case. I think there's 6 bottles to a case or 12 bottles to a case. And he'd buy it by the case. One day, he said, I've got to go to town. I'm running out of Mountain Dew, you know. I thought he was kidding me. You know, I live out here in the country. You're going to go to town to do what? You're going to go to town to buy a soda pop? I mean, I could see a guy going to town to buy a pack of cigarettes, but, you know, we're all addicted to cigarettes. You know, when you're a smoker, you're addicted to cigarettes. I can understand that, but you're going to town to buy a Coke? Yeah, I gotta have it. This guy actually would get the shakes if he didn't have his Mountain Dew. Not an uncle like that. He used to drink wine, and he was drunk all the time. When he was drunk, he was normal. When he was sober, he'd get the shakes. He'd get rowdy, you know, that's what addiction does to you. And so we want to keep in mind, you know, that there are a lot of things like MSG is an addictive food additive that's put into your food to make you come back and buy more. And that's why you're fat, because of the MSG, and you keep overeating because of a number of other factors and causes also. But MSG is one of those factors and causes. So when I see food that has MSG, or if I go into the Chinese restaurant, I say, do you use MSG in your products? Yes, we do. I don't trade at that Chinese restaurant. Then I go to another one. No, we don't use MSG in our products. Thank you very much. And we go back there again. Then there's a thing called lost leaders. Lost leaders, that's a neat way to do this. It's a kiss and cousin to bait and switch. Bait and switch. We salesmen, we're a hypocritical bunch. I mean, we're a bunch of damn hypocrites. And you know, we're necessary. You got to have salesmen over here, otherwise you wouldn't be able to get the things that you get. But my complaint about sales and salesmen is that we have to lie all the time. You know, and we lie to you when the truth would actually serve our purpose better. That's kind of my opinion of that. But we have these things called lost leaders, and so we have 1-cent sales, 2-for-1, half price sales, and things like that. As if, you know, we're just doing you people a real big favor. So we take a product, we take an item in the store that's a junk item. It doesn't make us any money. It could be binders, you know. And we got a bunch of this crap in here, and we want to get rid of it. And so what we do is we put them on sale, 2-for-1. Or we put 1 cent on there. You buy one and then pay us a penny and you get the other one, you know. Something like that. The purpose behind that is to get you into the store, because we know that once you come into the store, you won't buy just the binder or just the 2-liter Coke. When you come into the store, you're going to buy something else. And that's the other thing that's not on sale that we make the profit on. And this is a part of that traffic thing again. See, we know that the average guy that comes in the door spends $3.67 when he comes in the store. Well, then, if we have 100 people come into the store, then it's 100 times $3.67. But if we could get twice as many people to come into the store, on average, we're going to make twice as much money. And so we sacrifice 1 or 2 or 3 items, and we call these lost leaders. Now, the reason I say that's a kiss and cousin to bait and switch is because when you're in furniture and you've got big items, you know, it's one thing to pay $1 for a binder and then sell it for $2. And then that's a Keystone markup. See? Okay, it's something else. Now, if I put that binder on sale for $2, and then I'll let you have another one for 1 cent, if you buy one, you get one for a penny. So what I'm really doing is selling them at cost, so I don't lose any money. I brought you into the store with that item. Now that you're in the store, you're going to buy a pack of beer or a pack of cigarettes, or you're going to buy a Lazy Boy recliner, or. But you're going to buy something. So in the supermarkets, they're constantly putting out these sales, sales, and sales, and they got all these products over here, see? And so it's a process by which we continually do this every week to stir up the pot and to keep you people interested so that you'll keep coming back to the store to get these sales. And so, you know, you want strawberries, and so they got strawberries, and they got a ridiculously low price, or bananas on sale for 19 cents a pound. Well, that's what we paid for them, 19 cents a pound. You want bananas, you come into the store to buy bananas at 19 cents a pound. While you're in there, you're going to be buying coffee and other things that aren't on sale. So we got you into our store, we sold you the bananas at cost, and you're going to buy a bunch of other stuff while you're in here, and we're going to boost our traffic count, and our average sales are going to go up. Has nothing to do with we're concerned about you and your poverty, and we want to save you money. Hell, kids, let's grow up and get to be real people. And that bait and switch now works like this. And what I do is I'm selling waterbeds, or I'm selling furniture, I'm selling something, and I come in with this real ridiculous waterbeds, $99. Now, you know waterbeds aren't $99. Held the mattress, you know, cost you $69 or $89, and then there's the liner, and then there's the frame and all the rest. But no, I've got this, the wholesale on the mattress, the liner, and the frame. No heater, you know, no rails, no headboard, no deck and riser, just the frame, the mattress, and the liner. And some guys, they'll even keep the liner out, just the mattress and the frame. $99, and you go, wow, I can get a waterbed for $99, and it's in a liquidation sale, and Joe Smedley's waterbed store's going out of business sale, and it's everything goes floor to ceiling, wall to wall, regardless of cost, loss, or value. All right, so you go into the liquidation sale. Boy, you're going to cut a fat hog in the back here. So you come in as to how many of these $99 waterbeds do we have, by the way? Two. We got two of those. And so you come into the store, and you say, well, I want this $99 waterbed. And we say, well, now come on over here, because we're sold out of those $99 waterbeds. And you're mad as hell. But you had those advertised. I know, we had them, but they were so popular, we sold out of them the first day. But come on over here, I got this other waterbed over here, take its place. This is what we really want to sell you. And I can't sell this to you until I get you in the store. I got to get you in here so I can talk to you. And once I get you in the store, now I can start talking to you about why that $99 waterbed was a hell of a value. It really was the mattress and the frame. And wouldn't you really like to have a heater? Do you want to sleep on a cold waterbed? Wouldn't you really like to have a liner in case it springs a leak? Wouldn't you really rather have this thing on a deck and riser? And for only $19 here and $29 there and $39 there and $50 there, and we can put this package together for you. And you know, by the time I get through sweet-talking you, partner, I'm going to have you out here with a $1,000 waterbed. You know, or $600 or something like that. Which is my objective, to bait and switch. Now, people complain about that. So they caught on to that, and they complain. They go to the Attorney General. Now, I've got to work with the Attorney General. So I have to have what we call truth in advertising. The legislature gets involved over here, and we got all these rules and regulations and customs usages and practices. And so advertising, as I said, is a controlled lie. It's a controlled lie because I've got to tell you as much as the law requires me to tell you, and then I need to shut up when the law doesn't require me to give you that information over there. So I have to have the actual $99 bed. And so we take photographs and pictures of it so that when the AG comes down, after 50 people complain about our unfair advertising practices, we can show the AG, oh no, we had two $99 beds in here. This is a liquidation sale. Here's another little thing about liquidation sales. In your mind, when we say liquidation, we're overstocked or something like that, you know, a warehouse in inventory reduction sale or going out of business sale. In your mind, this store is closing. And what many of you people don't understand is that many companies specialize in liquidations. I was in the liquidation business. I know a little something about that. Now, here's the way we stage a liquidation. We're looking for a store. Sometimes a liquidation company will come into a town and buy a store for the purposes of putting on a liquidation. Now, this store is very marginal, and the guy that's got the store is on the rocks, and he's about to go out of business. And I don't care whether this is an office supply store or if this is a head shop or a furniture store, whatever the hell it is, this guy's on the rock. So I come in here and I buy all of his inventory at wholesale. I take his invoices and I buy all of his stuff at wholesale. I take over his lease. Maybe he's losing his lease. A lot of times they'll say, well, losing your lease sale. And so we need to liquidate all this stuff that's in there. Well, listen, this guy's been in business here for years and he couldn't sell this junk. And so I come in here and I say, well, here's why this junk doesn't sell is because we don't have enough traffic. And so we're going to have a liquidation blowout. So I blow into town, buy the store, operate this store for a few months so that I can meet all of the legal requirements, you know, for the AG's office and for the Justice Department and everybody else. And then I stage this going out of business sale. And I bring in six truckloads of all, I bring in stereo equipment and furniture from all over, you know. And like as not, I've bought a bunch of used stuff, you know, and new stuff. I got new and used and my warehouse is bulging. And now we got this going out of business liquidation. And I saturate television and radio advertising to generate interest. Maybe I bring in a live remote from the radio station, you know, the local pop station. And we have this live remote. And we have balloons and popcorn and peanuts and free hot dogs. This is to raise the traffic count. New people come in and you're looking around and we've got some lost leaders and we blow these leaders out of here. Now I turn my salesman loose. I got 10 salesmen here in the store. I turn my salesman loose on you and boy do we go to town. And then this sale is only going to last for 3 weeks, you know, until all this merchandise is gone. But what you don't know is that every night there are truckloads of merchandise coming in to replace the truckloads of merchandise that we're selling here in this going out of business sale. And it just enrages the local businessmen because they all know what we're doing. And they're there day in and day out buying insurance and paying business licenses and taxes and overhead. And we blow into town, cream the crop. I mean, we just saturate the airwaves and we're actually blowing this stuff out. And instead of marking it up, you know, like the furniture store's got this stuff marked up with a full keystone. No. Some of our stuff does have a full keystone, the popular stuff, and then all the rest of the junk, we're blowing it out of here with a half a mark in it or a third of a mark to keep the traffic count up. So that when you come into the store, you know, we've got some real values in here, no doubt about that. But that's not where the bread and butter and the money's coming from. The money comes from all the stuff that we're selling to you people once we get the traffic count up and we got you in the store. And we turn the salesman loose on you. And we show you all these neat ways that you can finance this and why should you deprive yourself? You owe it to yourself. You know, you owe yourself a treat today. Come on in here. Hurry, hurry, hurry. All right. Now that's the way that game is played. And we have fair trade items over here. And those fair trade items, they don't have any money in them. And there isn't any store that wants to carry fair trade items except that you people expect them to be there. And we have to have milk in the grocery store. We don't have to have milk in the furniture store or in the stereo store, but we have to have milk in the furniture store. See how that works? And we put that milk way in the back so that when you come in here to buy the milk, you have to go buy all these other thingies over here to tempt you into buying. So on the way back to the milk, we put all the stuff in here that we want to sell you. Grocery stores now oftentimes carry motor oil. Think of that. Motor oil in a grocery store? Well, of course. See, that motor oil has a full keystone markup in it. And while you're in the grocery store, hey, Walmart pioneered. They're no dummies. They said, you know, people don't want to go into 16 stores to buy 16 items. They want to walk into one store, buy all 16 items, and walk out. So you go to Walmart and you can buy shoes, motor oil, and milk. Now, where else can you go in and buy milk, shoes, and motor oil? Hell, while you're in there, you can buy a TV, you can buy jewelry, you can buy a Timex watch, and so on down the line. See that? Hell, they've even got gasoline now in the Walmart stores. All right, so remember the keystone markup is double. Two marks is double. You buy it for a dollar, you sell it for two, that's one mark. You buy it for a dollar, you sell it for three, that's two marks, and so on. And there's some items that have as many as 100, 200, or 300 marks in it. Can you believe that? So when John D. Rockefeller said competition is a sin, he wasn't just whistling Dixie. So jewelry now has three marks. Automobiles have one mark. Gasoline has only about, 6%. How many marks are in 6%? Take 100 and divide that by 6. And then it's 1/16th of a mark in a gallon of gas. I mean, that stuff is so cheap, it isn't worth handling. It isn't worth dealing with. But you put it out there as a leader. Gasoline works just like a loss leader. It just sucks you people into the store where you're going to buy beer. And that's where we put the gasoline. That's where we've got beer to sell. How's that? Okay, hang on here a second. I got to give you a reminder here at the halfway point that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. And for more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Keep in mind that the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. 8 schools in all. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Talking about advertising over here. Now, advertising, remember, takes many forms. It can be the salesman who's making the pitch to you. It can be an ad that you see on television. It can be a 60-second spot that you hear on the radio. It can be a business card. It can be a sign or a notice that says garage sale with an arrow on it. You know, that's all advertising. And advertising ought to be honest. In my view, it ought to be truthful. It ought to be factual. That's what attorney generals are trying to do. They're trying to get us, the salesmen out here and the merchants in the stores, to tell the truth, for crying out loud. You know, that's all they're trying to do. And I agree with them. And I think that we ought to turn over a new leaf here in this country and start telling the truth. And I think we would perform a better service. I can remember as a kid, we used to live in a little small community. And we didn't have to worry about lying in advertising and so on. I remember one time we were putting hay in the barn and we broke the track. You know, we had a team of horses down here at the bottom and a system of pulleys. And we pulled this hay up to the top and there's a big track that runs the full length of the barn. And then this, be about a ton or ton and a half of hay goes up on this pulley thingy and then it hits this trip and then it slides down this track. Well, this track broke. The track broke up there. And now we needed a carpenter because this track up there was made out of 4x4 wood and it was supported from the roof. And so, you know, we looked around and, well, who do you call when the track breaks in your barn? Well, you need a carpenter. And you need a carpenter now. I mean, you know, you got a crew of men working out here, you know. And so we can't use that end of the barn. We have to put the hay down at the other end, but we need a carpenter. Now, who would you go to in Lolita, California to get a carpenter. And so we went in the house and we called the local carpenter. His name happened to be Linus Thompson. Linus Thompson. Called old Linus and said, well, now here's the problem over here. So old Linus comes out. And he came out the next morning is what it was. And we told him it was the track. And so, well, at least the boss did. And so Linus came out. He's a pretty impressive guy. And old Linus, he was a local character. He's a carpenter. And he was known in the community as the carpenter. Linus the carpenter. He built houses. He repaired things. He did remodeling. I mean, he could do anything. He was a carpenter. He was a guy that could do anything. Now, we farmers out there, see, we're not carpenters. We can't cut a board straight. We don't have skill saws and tape measures. And if we had a tape measure, we wouldn't know how to read it. See? And I was really impressed. Old Linus, he comes out, he's got a pickup. And this pickup has got boxes in it. And he comes out in his full regalia. I mean, this guy looks like a general of the army. He's got a hammer, you know, slung from his bib overalls. I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but these carpenters, you know, they wear bib overalls. And he's got his pencils and there's special pockets all over these bib overalls. These bib overalls, they have pockets for pencils and pockets for tapes and pockets for hammers and all this. And he comes out in his regalia, you know, like a soldier ready for battle. See? And he brings his ladder out and he hangs this ladder up and he goes up into the haymow and he gets his tape measure and he measures this thing up, you know, and he comes down to his pickup and he gets his sawhorses out and he pulls a piece off. He's got this rack on here and he's got lumber, you know, and wood up on this rack and he pulls down the right piece of wood, a 4x4, and he puts it on his sawhorses and he cuts it and he hacks it and whacks it and he drills it and he makes this piece and then he goes back up in the haymow and he installs this piece and he bolts it into place and presto, magico, the thing is fixed. And there's no false advertising here. I mean, this guy doesn't even need to advertise. He's got what we call word of mouth advertising. This is Linus Thompson, the carpenter. And when something goes haywire, you call Linus. And Linus comes out and he fixes it. If you want to build a barn or a calf shed or a house, you call Linus. He comes out and builds it for you. And the guy doesn't lie, he doesn't cheat, he doesn't steal. He's a man of his word, he's honorable, and he doesn't need any contracts, it's just a handshake. And he'll send you a bill at the end of the month, and he knows you're going to pay it because you're honest. Everybody in the community is honest, and that's because everybody in the community practices the Ten Commandments. Everybody in the community knows thou shalt not steal. Everybody does that. Not kind of a miracle. Now today, you know, you don't do that. You go to the Yellow Pages and you look up some carpenter over here and you don't know if this guy's licensed, bonded, and insured or not, but you want him to be. And you ask him, are you licensed, bonded, and insured? And he says, oh yeah, I'm licensed by the state of California and I've got all these. And he sends out some workmen saying, this workman over here, maybe he's good, maybe he isn't. He does the job and you're dissatisfied. And so you file a claim with the Better Business Bureau and you go through all this hanky panky and hocus pocus. And then you don't pay because you're mad and then he sues you. And then you go to court and you got Judge Judy over here in the end of the act. And see all this crap that goes on over here. It's because we don't practice thou shalt not steal. And that's brought on by us salesmen over here because we lie to you all the time. And it makes you mad. And so then you go to the AG. The AG goes to the legislature and says, we need some laws. And we get all these laws. And now we got to have, you know, Linus, he wasn't licensed, bonded, and insured. Was he a general contractor? That's what we would call him today, but he didn't have any contractor's license. He didn't need it. Did he need any licensing? Hell, old Linus, no, he'd been building houses and building stuff, you know, for years and years. Where did he get his training? I don't know. It's what we call on-the-job training. He went out and worked to work for some guy, probably an apprentice, to some carpenter. We didn't have big building corporations, you know, that were out putting up subdivisions of hundreds of houses over here that have to be licensed, bonded, and insured because they're trying to screw you, blue you, and tattoo you. If you wanted a house built, you called a carpenter. The carpenter came out, took him 90 days with his helper to build a house. That's what it takes to build a house. Two men, build a house, 90 days. Some of the houses we build today are pretty good size. It might take them 6 months, but that's just two guys, just a master carpenter, and he might have a helper or two. He might have a grunt in the ground picking boards up or something. Now, there's a thing called telephone marketing. Have you ever gotten a call on the telephone? God, I love these calls on the telephone. I'm not liking them so much now because they're automated and computerized. What I liked is when the guy would call me on the telephone, he'd say, well, I'm Juan Hernandez, and I'm over here selling thus and such. See? Sometimes these people call, and they've got such a thick accent, you know that they're calling you from Bangladesh, Pakistan, or India. I mean, they don't even speak, you know, all they speak English, but it's so, their English is so good that, you know, us normal people can't understand them. And I used to like those guys because they'd call on the phone and they're selling siding, and I'd say, wow, I've been waiting for somebody to call me. I need siding. How much does it cost? And they give you the sales pitch and they go through this rigmarole and say, okay, now here's my problem. I've got this Victorian house and it's got all this gingerbread on it. Does your siding also cover the gingerbread? And this guy's from India. He hasn't got a clue as to what the hell gingerbread is on a house. And so, well, let me explain this to you. See, we have these turnings and dowels, and they're turned out in a lathe, and they're decorations around the house. And this siding over here, if we're going to put the siding on the house, the siding should also go around the turnings and the gingerbread and the decorations on the house, don't you think? And he's sitting there going, oh. I could keep those guys on the telephone for a half an hour. I would keep those guys on the telephone for so long they would get mad and hang up on me. It reminds me of the Mormon missionaries. I like salesmen. A Mormon missionary is a salesman. You ever stop and think about that? He's selling Mormon theology. Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, they're selling Jehovah's Witness theology. These guys are coming around looking for new members. They're recruiting. I'm not angry with salesmen. We have to have salesmen. We need people coming around and pitching us on new ideas and new products and new concepts. And the only thing that I'm complaining about is the lies and the hypocrisy that goes around with it. And these two Mormon missionaries, anyway, knocked on my door and I was home. It was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, normally, you know, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm not home. I'm out working. But for some reason, I was home. The wife was gone. And the children were gone. I was at home by myself. I don't know exactly why, but, you know, I was there by myself. The doorbell rings, and so I went to the doorbell, and here's standing in front of me two young boys, two young men, probably 20 years old, maybe. And I looked out on the walk, and here's two bicycles. And so here are these two, and dressed in suits in July. I mean, this is Boise, Idaho in July. It's hotter than a blue blaze of hell. And here's these two Mormon kids with their Book of Mormons in their hands, you know. And this one young boy, evidently the leader, he asked me this question. He said, "Do you know Jesus?" And I said, "I don't believe I do. Does he live here in the neighborhood?" And this one kid, he looks at the other kid like, "Boy, have we got a live one here." And so he said, "Well, we would like to talk to you about Jesus." And I said, "Well, I've been waiting for somebody to come and talk to me about Jesus. Come on in. Come in, please. Sit down." And I took him in the living room, sat him down. I said, I'm so pleased that you're here today. I have been wondering about Jesus for so long. And listen, can I get you anything to eat?" No, we don't. They're very polite young people, you know. No, we don't want anything to eat. Could I get you a drink?" We're fine. Thank you. It's awfully hot outside today." "Oh yes, it's really hot. You know, it's pushing up toward 100, and it'll be 100, you know, before long." Well, hell, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's already 100 degrees. And I said, "Well, would you mind if I had a drink?" "Oh no, we don't mind if you have a drink in your own home, in your own living room, while we're coming in to visit." So I went in the kitchen and I poured a double Jack Daniels on the rocks, and I came in, I sat down, I said, well, tell me about Jesus." And then I'm sitting here sipping on my JD, and this leader, you know, he pulls out the Book of Mormon. He starts talking about the Book of Mormon and Joseph Smith and Brigham Young and one thing and another. And so I was polite, and I let him talk for a little while. And then when there was a little break in the conversation, I said, "Now, When you came up to my door, you asked me if I knew Jesus. And that's the guy that I'm really interested in. Would you tell me more about Jesus? And I said, you know, could I get you a drink? You look like you're awfully dry. And they both said, well, no, we're fine, thank you. And very polite people. And so, and I always liked them because they were so polite. And so, and he started talking a little about Jesus and how Jesus fit into Mormon theology and about the Book of Mormon and so on and about Moroni and this went on for a little while. And I said, you know, boys, I'm going to go get me another drink. And so I excused myself. I went in the kitchen and I poured three drinks. I poured, three drinks of Jack Daniels doubles. On the rocks, brought them in, and I brought the bottle with me, and I set it down, and I said, now this is Jack Daniels. Jack Daniels is next to Wild Turkey, probably the finest sipping whiskey made in America. I believe they do have better sipping whiskey in Scotland than Ireland, but here in America, JD is the standard next to Wild Turkey. And so, drink up, boys. Now tell me more about Jesus. And so, I could tell that they were getting very uncomfortable. I mean, they've only been here 15, 20 minutes, and already they're kind of uncomfortable. And I said, well, let me ask you a question here about Christmas. And so I asked them about Christmas, and do you do Christmas? And they said, well, yeah, we do. And I said, well, what about Jeremiah 10, verse 1 through 6, that prohibits Christmas, and it's against the law? And they're just totally mesmerized. They never heard of Jeremiah 10. I don't think they'd ever read the Bible. Couple of Mormon missionaries, and they're out here on the street on their bicycles, going door to door, recruiting salesmen, looking for new members. Knocked on my door, asked me if I knew Jesus. I asked them if he lived in the neighborhood. They didn't know. I don't think they knew where Jesus lived. They came to talk about Jesus, didn't know where he lived. And then they started talking to me about Moroni and the Book of Mormon. What I wanted to know was more about Jesus. I said, drink up, boys, drink up. I mean, there's more there. The bottle's more than half full. And listen, any friend of Jesus is a friend of mine. And I want to share what I've got with you. And they were very, very uncomfortable and explained to me that they didn't drink. And I said, what? Wait a minute, boys. Now it's a hot day, and you come up and knock on my door, took up my time. I invited you in. I'm your host. I want to be personable. I want to be friendly. But you know, you're starting to get rude now. You know that? Now you know when you come to somebody's house and they offer you hospitality and you turn it down and you get rude about it, that's not very personable. Now is it, boys? And they were getting more and more uncomfortable, and when I would ask them a question, they would say, well, we don't know, but we'll ask the bishop, and we're going to ask the bishop this, and we're going to ask the bishop that, and we're going to ask the bishop about Christmas, and we're going to get back with you. And then I got my notepad out, and I said, okay, now what's your name again, son? And, you know, he told me it was Tom and Hank and the bishop. Now, who's this bishop guy that you're going to go talk to? Does he know Jesus? And so, as the conversation went on, I noticed that they were becoming more and more uncomfortable, and they were both standing up, and they wanted to get out of there as fast as they could. I don't know if they thought I was going to attack them, or if I was going to get rude and surly and or something like that. But anyway, they excused themselves, and as they were leaving, I said, now when are you coming back? Now remember, you promised to come back and give me the answers that you're going to get from the bishop. And so they promised that they would get back. Now that was the one thing about Mormons that I didn't care for. Now, those two boys lied to me. They never came back again. They promised and they never came back. And I didn't get their phone numbers. Now if I would have gotten their phone numbers, I would have called them and asked them about that. But I was careless. So the next time a Jehovah's Witness or a Mormon or somebody comes by, why don't you invite them in? Be personable. Be friendly. Ask about Jesus. And see whether or not these people are actually the made up of the substance that they claim they are. Maybe these guys are a couple of frauds and charlatans and really don't know what the hell they're talking about. That was kind of my conclusion about those two boys. Not to say that all Mormons are that way. I'm just pointing out that was my observation of those two young men. nice, personable young fellows. Now, when somebody calls you on the telephone and they're trying to sell you something, why don't you get into the conversation? I know, you slam the phone down, you get mad as hell, and I won't take it anymore, and you call the AG. You know, you could have a lot of fun. For instance, I've noticed that the calls here to the house, they're just computer-generated now. You pick up the telephone and there's this spiel and you say, wait a minute. Yes, I want to buy. How much does it cost? And it just goes on and on. This is a recording, so it just goes on and on. It's kind of like, you know, if you want to buy this siding, press 1. If you want to buy the blue siding, press 2. If you don't want to buy siding, but you want to buy something else, press 3, and we'll tell you what else we've got. You know, it's getting to be stupid now. That's what I'm objecting to, these computer calls. But when somebody calls, and there's a real live person on the other end, especially if they're from India or Pakistan, God, I really like those guys. And then they put me on the list, evidently, and they don't call this number again. This guy's crazy. This guy's a nutcase. All right. So then there's direct mail marketing. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but direct mail marketing sells 2%. And that's why they call you. See, it's a boiler. It's what we call a boiler room operation. See, we just sit a person down at the telephone, and we give them 10,000 telephone numbers. And we say, start dialing. In fact, they've even got automatic dials now. I mean, you just push the button and it dials, beep, 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 ring, ring, ring. And then you pick up the phone. And then the guy goes with his canned speech. And he's got this canned speech. I mean, hell, you can hire college kids and pay a minimum wage. They don't have to be salesmen. They just have to be voices that can. And so now they've got this thing down on computer. Now, see, they just give you a computerized speech. And it sells 2%. They call 100 telephone numbers. And 2 people out of that 100 telephone numbers will buy that product. Did you know that? 2 people will buy that product. Well, you know, it doesn't take a real genius to figure out, gosh, if our traffic count is 2%, we need to call 200, 400, 800, 1,000. If we can call 1,000 people, we can sell, you know, 20 products. 2 per 100, 20 per 1,000. And when you're selling big ticket items, you know, like Lazy Boy recliners or siding on a house or roofs or something like that, you know, then it's $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 sale, and you're selling 2%. Now, who are these 2% that buy this? I haven't got a clue. I never have bought anything from a telephone solicitation, but 2% of people do, and that's why they keep calling. As long as there's 2% buying, the other 98% of us have to listen. Or have to get called. You know, it's just part of the process. And that's called telephone marketing. But with direct mail, we do the same thing. You ever go down to the post office and you get these circulars and all these papers and brochures? We call it junk mail. Hey, listen, junk mail sells 2% also. And so I encourage all the junk mail I can get. See, I've got a place out here in what I call my furnace room. And I have wood heat here. And I need fire starter. I have fire starter. And there's just nothing better than the circulars and the brochures, you know, that come from Home Depot and Hank's Fine Furniture and so on. And so when this stuff comes into my mailbox, in fact, I've got 2 mailboxes. Two mailboxes. And out of the 2 mailboxes, you know, I get the same circulars in one mailbox as I get in the other. And I take all of that and I separate it and I pile it up and I bring it home and I put it on the pile. And it gives me all of the fire starter that I need for the entire year. Well, the entire heating season. Going into the fire season or into the heating season this year, I have all of my fire starter and it's all provided free of charge, and it's the finest fire starter that money can buy. All the advertisements that have been coming in over the year, I stack them up into my boxes that I have over here in my furnace room, and then there you are. How's that? Now, if there's something that you don't like and you don't want, you just write across there, return to sender. You know, you get some advertisement, and it says, it comes in an envelope, let's say, and it says, dated. You know, you've won $100 million, and it's got postage on it, see? And so what you do is you write on there, return to sender, address unknown, not at this address. And now here's a little trick that maybe you didn't know, but you see, it costs money to return this stuff. I don't know if you knew that or not, but they send this stuff out and it costs you 39 cents to send you this letter. And then I write on there, not at this address, return to sender, deceased or something across the letter over there, and then they gotta pay 39 cents to have that returned. Now, it doesn't take the guys on the other end who just paid you, paid 40 cents to send you this advertisement and 40 cents to get it back because you're dead. It doesn't take them long to remove you from that mailing list. In fact, you won't get anything from them again. Now, if you don't have wood heat like I have wood heat, see, and I need all of these advertisements, I need this stuff coming in to give me the fire starter to start my fires to keep myself warm. So I want more. So if there's any of you out there that are looking for a place to send your junk mail, it's Post Office Box 297 in Isabella, Missouri. Load me up. I need it. Okay, now for the rest of you people that have gas heat, or electric heat or something like that, and you don't want this, you just write across their deceased, return to sender, and when he has to pay 40 cents to get it back, he'll take you right off the mailing list. See how simple that is? I mean, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. So when some guy calls you from Bangladesh and wants to sell you siding, you know, you need to ask him some questions about, do you have the siding that matches the turnings on my gingerbread on my Victorian home? And how much extra does that cost? You know, and you get into the conversation and you suck up this guy's time. And pretty soon he wakes up to the fact that he's probably not going to make a sale here and he's not going to get a commission and he's not going to make any money and therefore his little bread snappers are going to go hungry. And all of a sudden they don't call you anymore. That's my problem here. They're not calling. So if you want to sell something, if you're in Bangladesh or India or China, and you're looking for customers, call me. Call the law hour. I want to talk to you. And if you're selling religion and you want somebody to talk to, come knock on my door and ask me if I know Jesus. And I'll ask you if he lives in the neighborhood. And then you'll have somebody to talk to. But be honest with me, would you? Don't come in here like a hypocrite and lie to me. You know, come in here and tell me what it is you're trying to sell. So there are numerous ways, boys and girls, for people to sell. And advertising is the methodology. We need advertising. I'm not opposed to advertising, and I'm not opposed to salesmen. I'm one of them. I'm opposed to lying salesmen, and I'm opposed to advertising that's misleading and trying to sell me something that I don't need, can't use, shouldn't have, and probably don't want. That's my objection. So now you're armed. Go out there when the salesman asks you the closing question, do you want to pay by cash or check? Ask him if he takes gold or silver coin. And when he says no, he doesn't, you say, well, God, you know, if you took gold coin, I might buy from you. And look at the face he makes. All right, I'm about out of time, kids. I'm going to have to leave it right there. I want to remind you, though, that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school or The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Remember, The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.